Some big corporations are still quite worried about the economy.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The biggest private employer in America today reported disappointing profits and is lowering its sales projections for the year ahead. Walmart stock in early trading was down about 3%. Also, Cisco Systems said it's laying off 5% of its workforce, 4,000 people, with demand uncertain for its computer networking equipment. Its stock was down nearly 7% in early trading. Diane Swong, chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago, joins us on Thursday. Morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So here I have at least two big companies worried about whether customers will be in a buying mood for their wares in the year ahead, Cisco and Walmart. Stocks are taking a beating right now, but this tells us something about the economy, doesn't it?
It does. What we're seeing is real earnings actually declined in the month of July, and that's because the composition of employment gains has not been good enough. We're also seeing some of the sequester come through in terms of furloughs. That doesn't show up in the jobless rate, but clearly it hits incomes and the ability of people to shop, and we're seeing it across a large spectrum of retail sales where people are spending but certainly very cautious on how they're actually spending the money they've got.
So when we say the word recovery too many times in our analysis of things, maybe we're overstating it.
Well, we certainly are subpar recovery is the way to say it, and everything is relative, and this recovery has been not the strongest by an understatement. This is a recovery that has been very painful to many, and the lingering effects of it are still showing up.
That said, we do have news this morning that new claims for unemployment benefits dropped to their lowest level in 6 years. That's something.
It's something, and it's good news. It also means that fewer people are on extended unemployment insurance benefits than there used to be, so they're falling out of the mix. And we're seeing increases now very recently in the number of federal civilian employees and veterans on those numbers. That's a reflection of the sequester.
Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, thanks so much for checking in.
Thank you.
The rate of home foreclosures was down 32% in the year through July, but this is a headline from Realty Track that needs some closer scrutiny, something we tasked Marketplace's Sabri Benishour to do.
The drop in the foreclosure rate reflects some good things for sure. House prices have been rising, new foreclosures have plummeted, but that headline masks the fact that things are still pretty bad. Chris Mayer is professor of real estate at Columbia Business School.
2.8 million loans are 90 days delinquent or in some stage of foreclosure. So it's still a significant problem.
And on the home buying side, two factors are jamming things up. Adam Levitin is a professor at Georgetown Law. He says 15% to 20% of homeowners with mortgages are still underwater.
Take something like Las Vegas, where you have a large number of underwater homeowners. They're really not able to sell their homes.
So that puts a crimp in housing inventory. And second, home buyers are now competing with investors in some markets, says Mayer at Columbia Business School.
You hear homeowners saying, gee, I want to jump into the market, but I can't find anything to buy. And that's a hard dynamic.
In short, he says, it's not like the housing crisis is over and we can declare victory. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
I hesitate here at the risk of sending forth an additional wave of existential dread this morning. But here's the question. Someday, when we're vulnerable and infirm, will we have the money to pay for caregivers? It turns out the economics of long-term health care insurance are a mess. Marketplace's economics guy, Chris Farrell, has been looking into this. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So long-term care insurance, so we're clear, what situation is it designed to address?
As you get older and it becomes difficult for you to do, you know, the things that we don't even think about, the sort of daily tasks like eating and bathing. So long-term care insurance comes in so you get the care that you need. And the policy typically covers you in a nursing home, assisted living center, or the care may come into your own home.
The companies are having trouble making money off this, they say, but I thought insurance companies had this sort of calculation down to a science, the grim business of guessing how long we will stay alive.
All insurance companies have had trouble making money because of these low interest rates. They haven't been making as much on their investment income on the policies that they've been writing. But what also makes it difficult is they've made assumptions about, oh, you know, people will take long-term care insurance and they'll keep it for a couple of years and then they'll drop it. Well, it turns out people aren't dropping their policies. They're keeping them longer. And, you know, the cost of health care keeps going up. And so it's been a very difficult policy to price. And a lot of the assumptions of the past have turned out to be false.
Among the problems here, the coverage can be expensive.
It is really expensive, and it's getting more expensive. At the same time, who can avoid this discussion about an aging population? And so the need for long-term care is growing, but that market is in turmoil.
What are some of the questions, Chris, that you might ask as you consider this sort of coverage?
Well, the question comes up a lot, particularly people in their 50s and early 60s. Should I have long-term care insurance? And if you're in the low-income side of the spectrum, the answer is no. And if you're really wealthy, you don't need it, but the wealthy typically buy it because it's a very smart policy to own. But what about the vast middle? If you're able to fund fully your retirement savings plan, long-term care insurance is for you. However, if you have to skimp on that retirement savings plan in order to fund a long-term care insurance policy, I'd steer clear of it.
Marketplace's economics guy, Chris Farrell, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
And before we go, alcohol contributes to the economy, but drunkenness takes it away. Using CDC data, a study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine calculates the price tag of drinking too much, costs for families and governments in sickness, injury, and death. The typical cost per state is $2.9 billion a year, but in California, $32 billion. The highest cost per person of drinking too much is in Washington, D.C., $1,600 per capita. The highest cost per drink is Utah, it turns out. Beyond the money for the actual beverage, the study finds $2.75 in bad effects. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.